big swings in oil prices are among the ripple effects of the hit on Saudi Arabia's oil industry.
Investors and really consumers at the pump might want to buckle up for a prolonged period of volatility here, because one of the issues is that no one really knows right now the extent of the damage in Saudi Arabia and how long the facilities will be affected and when their exports will be back to normal.
Plus, the New York Fed takes a rare step into the repo market. What's that mean? We'll have the details coming up. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Let's start with Saudi Arabia. The kingdom's oil minister offered a reassuring message on Tuesday, saying Saudi Arabia will return to normal oil production levels by the end of the month. Saudi Arabia says it's already restored 50% of its lost production since the attacks on its oil infrastructure over the weekend. The minister also had another reassurance about the expected public debut of the world's most profitable company, Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company, Aramco. The kingdom says the oil giant's IPO plans won't be impacted by the attacks. Oil prices spiked on Monday but had pared back on Tuesday. We'll have more on what's behind those swings coming up. Walmart, the nation's largest private employer, likely discriminated against dozens of female employees. That's according to memos from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which were reviewed by The Wall Street Journal. Our Sarah Nassauer has more on this exclusive.
There's been a group of women that have been trying to seek damages from Walmart for pay discrimination for nearly two decades. The EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has issued some documents saying that they believe there is reasonable cause to believe that Walmart did discriminate in terms of pay and in some cases promotions or both for 178 women. This means that there could be settlement talks. It's a procedural step that pushes the ball forward. But these women, in some cases, have been going through the courts in various twists and turns for nearly two decades on this topic. A lot of these women haven't worked for Walmart in a long time. It's a tiny percentage of Walmart's workforce. Walmart is the largest employer in the country. It has 1.5 million workers today. So this is a tiny percentage of their overall employee base. However, you know, this has now been in the news on and off for nearly 20 years. And that, of course, plays a role. And bringing it to Walmart's attention is an issue. Bringing it to the public's attention is an issue. And, you know, talking to some of the lawyers that represent the women, that is part of the goal. And that part has certainly been accomplished.
In a statement, Walmart said the allegations aren't representative of the experiences of millions of other women who have worked at Walmart. The U.S. Justice Department has slapped former intelligence contractor Edward Snowden with a lawsuit over his new memoir, Permanent Record, which hit bookshelves on Tuesday. The government wants to seize the book's financial proceeds and bar Snowden from giving speeches related to the book. In 2013, Snowden leaked secret details about the National Security Agency's classified surveillance programs. He fled the U.S. before the leaks were published and has been living in Russia ever since. Snowden faces criminal charges of violating the Espionage Act in the United States. Saudi Arabia is the world's largest exporter of oil, and it plays a central role in world energy markets. That reality was laid bare after attacks on the weekend knocked out about half of the country's total output, and in turn, about 5% of global oil supply. That may not sound like a lot, but it's led to big swings in oil prices this week. Joining me now to talk more about investor reaction is Wall Street Journal reporter Amrith Ramkumar. Amrith, we knew to brace for volatility after the disruptions in production this weekend, but why do we see such big swings in oil prices when it's in regards to production in Saudi Arabia?
The main reason is that in terms of millions of barrels, this is the largest attack ever. And like you said, Saudi Arabia is the world's largest crude exporter. And even though other producers like the U.S. have the capacity to supply several million barrels a day of oil, Saudi Arabia is the only one that has meaningful spare capacity. That's production that can quickly be turned on in an emergency. And it also exports several million barrels a day. So while the U.S. could be okay with its heavy supply and strategic reserves, and other countries also have plenty of stockpiles, Asian countries that count on Saudi Arabian crude, and again, some of these types of oil have different grades and are very specific to meet the needs of refiners. So there are all these complex layers to this issue, and that's why we saw one of the biggest moves ever for oil on Monday.
So tell us a little bit more about that spare capacity, because as you mentioned, we have been reporting on booming U.S. shale production, but it's not an issue of so much of who can step in, but how quickly?
That's exactly right. And you have to remember that the U.S. still has limited export capacity and still imports a ton of oil. So it's a completely different ballgame. So the U.S. can produce more oil, but getting it out to the rest of the world is a big challenge. That's why some people think the biggest countries impacted would be the Asian countries that, again, count on Saudi Arabia. That would be China, Japan, Taiwan, Korea. And in some cases, they don't have great options to fill that void.
Amrit, is that because of the proximity of Asian markets to Saudi Arabia?
There are a couple of reasons Asian markets might be more affected. There's the proximity issue and also the issue, again, of specific types of crude. So one of the issues with the attacks is that they hit Abqaiq, the world's largest processing facility, and that processes about 8% of the world's oil. And one analyst I spoke to said that was the mothership of the Saudi energy system. So if they can't process different types of crude and really get the grades that some of these countries need, analysts say it could be really hard for those countries to replace it easily.
So what are we expecting in the days ahead as Saudi Arabia fixes the damage caused to these facilities? Are we expecting more volatility? And what actually is the extent of the damage there?
Yeah, investors and really consumers at the pump might want to buckle up for a prolonged period of volatility here, because one of the issues is that no one really knows right now the extent of the damage in Saudi Arabia and how long the facilities will be affected and when their exports will be back to normal. So there are a wide range of impacts here. And again, we also have U.S. sanctions on Iran and Venezuela. Saudi Arabia was one of the countries that stepped in to fill the void to make up for that lost Iranian production. So people expect big swings in both directions to continue. On Tuesday, we saw prices fall about 5% a day after they rose 15% on a Reuters report that production could return to normal more quickly than expected. But some people expect these conflicting signals to play out for a while. So it's going to be an interesting ride for sure.
Wall Street Journal reporter Amrit Ramkumar joining us in our studios in New York. Thank you so much, Amrit.
Thanks for having me.
The Federal Reserve Bank of New York took a rare step on Tuesday, adding $53 billion into banking systems through repurchase agreements. It's what's known as the repo market. Basically, companies that have a lot of securities trade those in just for the short term to get their hands on quick cash. They agree to repurchase the securities at a later date for a higher price. The difference is the repo rate, and that rate unexpectedly spiked on Monday and again on Tuesday, which is when the Fed stepped in. Here now to explain what it all means and why it matters is Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Kruger. Daniel, because this is such a rare move, can you explain what conditions led the New York Fed to take this step?
Well, normally in the repo market, roughly $1 trillion worth of transactions happen every day where people who want to borrow cash use government securities typically as a collateral for borrowing that money. And what we've had recently is a lot more collateral than we've had money available to borrow. So the Fed stepped in and provided more money into the repo market, allowing more, you know, lending to take place.
Is the fact that the New York Fed had to step in here raising concerns elsewhere? Could this be more widespread?
Well, it's raising concerns because the Fed has been doing things in the last couple of years that have taken cash out of the economy. They've reduced the size of their balance sheet, and that has lowered the amount of reserves available for people in the repo market to lend, many people think. And that has, you know, contributed to some of the cash shortage. And then there have been a few things that happened in the last week that don't always happen in terms of quarterly tax payments that corporations had to make, in terms of a rollover in Treasury securities where there were a lot of bond purchases that needed to be settled that day, which drained a lot of cash out of the economy. And so there were some particular events that were very taxing in terms of the availability of cash.
So, Daniel, this gets pretty complicated here. Why should the average person care about these changes? What's the practical effect on our everyday lives?
So one practical implication that is actually positive for average investors, if you have a money market account, one of the bigger lenders in the repo market is the money market account industry. And so they've been able to lend money to people with securities as collateral at very attractive rates. More troubling is that this gums up the financial works a little bit. When financial markets plumbing becomes an issue, that's never really a good thing because it makes it uncertain for big banks about how they can, you know, raise money to trade bonds, for instance. And in this case, where there has been a reduction in the amount of reserves available in the repo market, it's, you know, raised questions about just how much reserves banks have to participate in these activities.
We know the central bank is holding its two-day policy meeting this week. Is there any implications for the choices they might make?
Well, it's unlikely that this will affect the Fed's decision whether or not to lower interest rates. But the Fed is definitely concerned about the repo market because the repo market does tend to trade in close proximity to where the Fed sets its funds rate. And if the repo market is trading at a vastly higher rate, that raises questions about whether the Fed is, you know, properly setting rates. And the central bank relies on investors and bankers to be confident that it knows what it's doing. So questions like that are never, they're not good.
Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Kruger joining us in our studio in New York. Thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you.
And the Fed announced late Tuesday that it would conduct another repo transaction on Wednesday, injecting up to $75 billion in cash into money markets. For the latest details, head to our website, wsj.com. Longtime political journalist Cokie Roberts died in Washington on Tuesday at the age of 75, following complications from breast cancer. Roberts, the daughter of politicians, began her career in local news and CBS News before joining NPR to cover Congress in 1978. She joined ABC a decade later and co-anchored the Sunday political talk show This Week with Sam Donaldson from 1996 to 2002. Wall Street Journal executive Washington editor Jerry Seib knew Roberts as a fellow journalist covering Washington and the White House.
If you go back and look at Cokie's career, when she grew up and came of age and became a star, although she never acted like a star, but when she became a star in broadcast journalism, covering politics in particular was pretty much an old boys club kind of a environment. And she obviously wasn't that. And I don't think she was flashy about being a pioneer, but she was a pioneer, and she kind of provided a role model for a lot of young women journalists who saw political journalism as something they wanted to do and said, why not? And then they saw Cokie Roberts doing it at the highest level and in the most sophisticated possible way and said, well, yeah, I can do that too. You know, today, when it's not nearly so segregated an environment, that may seem like a quaint idea, but I think when Cokie became Cokie Roberts, it was a very big deal. And as again, she didn't wear it on her sleeve, but I think she was proud of it and certainly understood that she was in her own way a pioneer.
Former President George W. Bush and his wife Laura were among the many offering condolences, calling Roberts a talented, tough, and fair reporter. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.